sort of getting my car out of hock near the end of this class so I don't end up stuck on the freeway for too long to make that call. I'm going to just talk about background, definitions, give some examples, talk about how BCAs relate to previous attacks, talk about the IW implications, and talk about protective measures. Back in about 93, Fred Giesler wrote a paper. I don't know if anybody can ever get a copy of it again, but it's called something about reflexive control. It has to do with the fact that when you hit somebody in the arm, their arm bends. And the same thing works with computer systems and with people and with organizations. And the implications of reflexive control seem to me to be very interesting and intriguing in the information protection arena because of the way it can be used to exploit the organization. Also, there were some experiments on noise creep at DISA in 93, and there's a story, a very well-known story, I guess it's a true recollection of what happens when you can put a frog in boiling water and it jumps right out, okay? But if you put a frog in lukewarm water and slowly turn up the temperature, eventually the water will be boiling and the frog will not have jumped out. It'll just get boiled to death. And the reason is that the frog adapts to the temperature and doesn't notice the big difference. And the same is true of people. If you've ever been in a sauna, for example, you may know that if you slowly turn up the temperature of the sauna, the people will likely just die and not notice that it's very hot unless they have a watch on or something, which is why saunas come with warnings. So this did experiments on what happens when you slowly increase the noise of things that may look like attacks in a computer network. And one of the things they found out was that people just don't notice it. If you increase the attack level slowly, eventually you can get up to what would previously have been called a raging attack, and the people running the system say, this looks normal to me. And then, of course, once the noise is way up there, then you can launch real attacks that are below the signal-to-noise ratio. Then in about 94, we had internet-based port scanners that started to come out that would look for what ports you're using to try and find services that could be exploited. And at first, those attacks would go against one machine and just look at all the ports. And I started to get concerned that we had automated response to three password guesses, or they very quickly came out with a Satan detector or something like that. But suppose instead of doing it that way, you did it this way. You did distributed scanning to stay below the threshold of threshold detection scheme. Okay, so what you would do then is instead of going port 1, port 2 through port N on a particular victim, you do a distributed scanning attack that takes a whole set of victims, maybe your whole internal network, and just looks at one port on each machine, and then maybe comes back again sometime later. And that way you can do the same effective attack, but stay below the detection threshold. For example, span a class C IP network, breadth first instead of depth first. You stay below almost all the detection thresholds. And it's actually very often more effective than a single system sweep at getting into an organization because weaknesses tend to be spread around different places in different ways. So if you happen to hit a strong system on your first attempt, you'll think the organization is strong with a depth-first search, but on a breadth-first search, you'll eventually find the weakest system. And we all know about the weakest link. On a separate but not previously related area, we have the classic two-level attack where the bad guy breaks into an intermediary site and uses that intermediary site to attack the victim. And it's been commonly known for years. It tends to break the link back to the attacker. The intermediary may have access to the victim while the original attacker did not. And there's a very target-rich environment for potential intermediaries out in the internet. All maybe 90, 98% of all the systems just stuck out on the internet have known vulnerabilities. So you just break into any of those, use that as an intermediary. Then when they trace it back, then they'll have one less out of 100 million systems on the internet that has that particular vulnerability, if they bother to fix it. Or if you haven't lied and told them that you're the systems administrator so that when they sent you the message, they ignored it. This leads us to, when you combine these things, to distributed coordinated attacks, which is mathematically described as that, but really distributed means there are multiple indirect paths. Coordinated means against specific victims. Attack means it's malicious. And that's where we get the picture, the DCA logo, so to speak. You have some number of attackers going through some number of intermediaries, maybe only one or maybe multiple intermediaries along the way, attacking some set of victims. So I'm going to give you some real-world examples of DCAs, including some of those. One of my favorites exploits a previously known vulnerability in a new and interesting way, I guess. It was long known, for example, that there was a PostScript vulnerability in so-called secure browsers, that if you sent a PostScript file and they had PostScript interpretation enabled, then because PostScript is a general purpose language, that you could send a program, just have a program up on a web page. When they pushed the button for that thing, they got the PostScript, they interpreted it, and it went and modified their password file or whatever it did, general purpose program. It was demonstrated in mid-95 in self-test. You could at one point come to the all.net website, push a button, and it would do a test of your site automatically. And one of the tests it did was, are you susceptible to that attack? Actually, at some point it was offered for demonstration to people like the NSA. And it was actually demonstrated in tests on our all.net server in 96. And a variation on this was used, and here's the picture of it. And by the way, this is a way to get past almost every current firewall. Okay, just as a side. And basically, Joe on the browser inside the firewall is going out to evil.com. So, but it's easy to filter this, right? All we do is check for the organization name, look at the IP name, and if it's like evil.com or badguy.com, don't go there. So you know we're safe. This is the scanning approach to firewall security. Joe in the browser goes to evil.com, and evil.com sends back, for example, a PostScript file. And the PostScript file is interpreted and causes the computer running this browser to launch attacks against other victims that are inside the firewall. The key point being here that the firewall can't examine all possible content of things coming through into the browser to determine which ones are safe and which ones are not. The browsers of today all have general purpose interpretation mechanisms. And with that general purpose interpretation mechanism being run inside the firewall, you've just granted the attacker a program in your firewall that can be used to attack other machines. I'll give you a better example later on, easier to implement version of that attack. So now on another completely different line of interesting stuff that happened, in 94, 95, Satan and the vulnerability testers were out there, and all.net had a free remote internet test, and you can push the button. And then published 50 ways to attack your worldwide web systems, which included the browser as an inside attacker. So the ideal is out there. And then test results from all.net showed that testing could dramatically reduce vulnerabilities. So people were using our site to do testing and then fixing the holes that the test found, which was beneficial. Nowadays, they just buy ISS scans for $10,000 from CPA firms. Then they just push the free button on the internet. How the market has changed. Somewhere along the line here, I decided that because of this below threshold attack idea and the difficulties associated with that, I would try a zero tolerance approach to defense. anything that came into my server that was not legitimate, I would send an email back to the administrator of the originating system expressing my desire that they investigate and giving them the full details. It was relatively polite, but that's a matter of opinion, as we may see. The zero-tolerance approach was published in early 96, and then there was the threat. The threat you can't see quite all of it, but it was an email that said, "Who the hell are you? I don't care if you coined computer virus. I can telnet into wherever I want. Don't be writing me back here again. I will get to your system. Feel free to write me back for any other complaints you have to give me." And then BEE-ACH, which I recently found out is a hacker acronym for BIACH. Pronounced properly. I thought it was BIACH. I thought it was maybe some underground secret word, but no. It's just... Sometime shortly after that, somebody did something, well, a whole group of people got together and said, "We're going to get Fred," because a whole bunch of people had, you know, people that had broken into systems were now getting caught from the automated response, and I generally had a less than polite perspective on hackers. I think I published somewhere that you would it would be stupid to hire an ex-hacker, an ex-computer criminal. I didn't say an ex-hacker, an ex-computer criminal to do security for your systems. And the reason I gave was that anybody that could get caught, you know, just couldn't be that good. there were other justifications, but that was my favorite. And so I got these people upset with, for some reason or another. They decided to go against our site. So the best attacker was C2.org. That was the cleverest of them. I'll give you some ideas of some other ones probably later. But the victim was all.net. Used more than 500 intermediary sites in 8 hours from all over the world. And the intermediaries were unaware of the activity. And what they did at C2 was they implanted in their homepage a image, left angle bracket IMG, which is something in a web page that causes you to automatically load that file and display it as if it's a GIF file or what have you. And the image command said IMG space gopher colon slash slash all.net colon 23. That 21 is an error, 23. In other words, the gopher client or whatever in the browser's machine would go to all.net on port 23, because that's what gopher does. Slash zero is the beginning of all gopher stuff. It had a syntax check. So if you put a slash zero, it will then send whatever's a slash zero off to all.net on port 23, or, you know, wherever you want it to send it to. So when they read this, their browser did a telnet over to all.net. And if they put in a user ID and a carriage return and or a new line character and a password attempt and a new line character, then it would try logging in under a user ID and password. And in fact, after that, a new line followed by echo space quote user ID password end quote pipe to mail to wherever they wanted to, you know, mail to cypherpunks at whatever.org. Then it would have posted a valid user ID and password for that system out on the cypherpunk bulletin board. Mailed from all.net. Okay? And so what they did was they managed to get 500 sites in 8 hours to multiply come in with different telnets to try and attack. Yes?
How did they get the attack?
They just make it up. You know, make root and the password is A, root and the password is B. It's just password guessing attack. They didn't know a real user ID and password. Nobody ever broke into all.net. I mean, it's not. They tried, right? But the idea here is it's under threshold, right? You only get one attempt from each place or two attempts from each place, so the threshold detectors won't pick it up. It's coming from all over the network. It's indirect, so if you try to trace it back, you're always finding, you know, somebody else, not the person that actually wants the attack. So February 27th to March 10th, there were maybe 20 access attempts, 20 illicit access attempts per day. March 11th, there were 19. March 12th, 19. Then March 13th, that's about 45 minutes into the new day, Eastern Time U.S., several attempted telnets per minute. In fact, select hosts tried maybe scores of times, up in the area of 100 times within 1 minute. And by 6:30 in the morning, we had 2,000 attempts from 500 different sites. Okay? I woke up at about 6:30 in the morning that morning, because as I normally do, and I went over to see what happened that evening with the old security automation, because it wouldn't wake me up over anything so subtle as thousands of attacks. You'd have to actually break in before it would bother to wake me up. And so it took about 20 minutes to trace down the source of the attack. I'll tell you how we did that later, because if I told you that now, you could just leave. You don't want to do that. We did that by coordinating the responses to the zero tolerance response with cooperation from scores of sites, more details later. And then we shut down the attack. Here's how. Now, I want to note that we have, that this has not yet reached the statute of limitations on this set of events. And there is law enforcement in the room, so I certainly wouldn't want to say that I did anything illegal in stopping any of these attacks. However, once we knew where the attack, or at least one of the major sources of the attack was coming from, we tried to contact them via telephone and beeper and all sorts of other means. But the systems administrator, or the various people that were potentially administrators at the site that was doing this, refused to respond to any of our attempts. And being, as the audit trails indicated, that the administrator at the site was the first person to do that as the thing started up, we believe that that was potentially the cause. Eventually, we went to the ISP's ISP, and the telephone call really ended it. But there's this little drop here. Let me show you this graph here. There's this little drop in activity from their site here. I don't know if you've noticed. And the question comes up, how did that drop occur? And I don't know the actual cause, but I do know that at some point, once we knew that that was where this thing was being sourced, we decided that we would want to keep them fully appraised of the process that was underway at our site. So we sent copies of the email that we sent to each of the intermediary sites to them, to their systems administrator, their mail administrator, to the root user, and several other people identified as responsible for the site, to make sure that they were fully appraised on a moment-to-moment basis of everything that was taking place. And I don't know why, but for some reason, after several thousand of those messages went through, their system went offline. And that must have been it. That was it. It did. It managed to return some time later, and I don't know if I mentioned it. I probably didn't. I did a study, part of this the same report that described this DISA study. We did a study 93-94 about the potential for people using electronic mail to attack command and control sites in the United States, And we did some experiments at that time that indicated that you could overwhelm the system with email and cause it to crash. And we reported that to the forum, and I understand that all systems have now repaired that problem. So. The view from all.net is this is what you will see when this happens to you. They're out there to get me. You've got lots and lots of different attackers from all sorts of different places, the whole world, trying to get you, and you have no idea why. The view from each of the intermediaries is that I visited a lot of websites. I never heard of all.net before, never visited them. Why would all.net say I attacked them? I visited NASA and San Francisco State and IBM and Microsoft. I never visited all.net. Plus, I certainly never telnetted there. I was just cruising the web. Some other examples of DCAs. The password guessing DCA, I described it to you. Here's how it looks. The browser goes out, and evil.com sends gopher:victim23, again, I miswrote 21, /0/telnetvictim.org, next UID, next password, echo this to mail, and then kill.90 is a Unix command to log off, essentially. It's a lazy way to log off of the system. And, well, you just gotta think about it. Yes, sir?
Just relying upon a system that's running the browser.
No. The person running the browser visited evil.com, never knew anything about all.net, was never made aware, did not have knowledge or consent of this process. It's all invisible. All.net, you mean the victim.org? Victim.org? Or victim.org is essentially impenetrable. That's not the point. The point is somebody can try. If you're the victim, whatever you have between the browser and your computer is what protects you. If that browser is inside your firewall, then probably you have nothing. It's not that NASA doesn't have to browse to a dangerous site. Joe, from anywhere, browses to the dangerous site, and they accidentally might attack NASA. Or they may be visiting NASA, never knowing that their browser is trying to telnet into somewhere else. Okay, so NASA had nothing to do with it. They were innocent. In the back. The question is, did this ever result in a denial of services to my system? And the answer is, it slowed some of the processing of some things down, but I designed my system so that there is nothing that could happen from the outside world that would cause it to shut down. That is, if you came in full bandwidth over that link with the worst case attack you could create, it would not bring my system down, about 10% performance hit. It did cause a slowdown in some other network traffic coming in over that link, but it wasn't very significant because my response times are quite good. So unfortunately, they did no quantifiable harm that would reach the $40,000 at that time FBI threshold of worthy of facing them then. Yes, sir? The browser has to be able to interpret information sent from that evil website in such a way as to cause those events to take place. That's correct.
So what about,
is that capability built into things like Netscape? Absolutely. And the example here of gopher:// see, because the gopher program interprets these characters as meaning something in particular, that can typically happen. Now, since that time, I think the newer versions of Netscape block Gopher from that. But an ActiveX or a Java applet potentially, or a Telnet or an FTP or almost anything else, any service out there that has either general purpose functionality or even the ability to echo things out on some other port is adequate to do this. Absolutely. Unless you do something to secure this browser, then content-based attacks work through your firewall for that browser. And in fact, if anything else, you can do this with FTP without a browser. It can be done with just FTP or almost any service that runs through that firewall. The content coming back can potentially cause it to launch attacks against other places. This is one of the reasons that firewalls have very limited effectiveness. Yeah? That's true. If your firewall required that outbound telnet had authentication, that would block attacks where it came into your organization and went back out. But it would not prevent things where the browser is inside the firewall going to something else inside the firewall.
Well,
How does an FTP transfer cause something to be executed? It doesn't, but it's a side effect of the way URLs work, these universal resource locator things, that you could say FTP colon, and with the right stuff over here, you would have an off chance of being able to send the bytes that you wanted off to the system you wanted to attack. Okay, FTP has some other problems related to the subsequent protocols of how ports are controlled. For example, you can change the port that FTP is running on during the process, and then that has, it's a little bit tricky, but I don't think there's a fix for this one yet, so I'm going to quite discuss it in great detail here. Now that we've run through all these examples, these things will all be trivial to you. For example, we go through the browser to victim colon port 25 slash 0 and then follow that by one of the known sendmail attacks. And it lets this guy launch a sendmail attack against another victim inside the firewall, even though firewall is protecting against the sendmail attack. And then, of course, once you've broken into this victim machine over here, then you can have it set up a tunneled IP channel so you can get into the whole internal network. What is the status of current browsers? As far as I'm aware, all current browsers can be caused to do this in one form or another. There are configurations that you can put. You can disable enough features so that those browsers won't do that, but that means disabling almost all the features. Right? Any of the built-ins, any of the plugins, they're all potentials for this. So anything short of just looking at this page is a candidate. And even maybe looking at the page, you know, if it's looking at a GIF file, that's one thing. But if it's looking at a PostScript file, that's a potential hole. Unless you have a properly secured PostScript interpreter on each machine. And of course, you download these things from the network, so you don't know what you're downloading. But that's another whole issue. Multi-hop DCA. This is where multiple attackers use multiple techniques and paths. So they break in with a sendmail attack to an intermediary, then an FTP attack, and then come after you with a telnet. And so you can just imagine that there are all sorts of attacks that people can use against all sorts of intermediaries going through multiples before getting to the victim. That's a more sophisticated DCA. You could implement a DCA using viral computation. For example, you have a DCA that's it's a virus that says somewhere in it, it reproduces, it says if a date's greater than such and such a date, dial 911 on the modem. So it spreads out to computers all over the world, computer to computer, etc. And it's, well, in the United States it's 911. You might want to check the country code and do whatever their emergency service is. But all these computers start dialing 911. And it takes out emergency service in New York City. No sweat. You know, there are only 40 or 50 lines going into 911. They're all being consumed by modem in silent mode, so the speaker's turned off, so the user doesn't notice. Dial them out. Yeah? It's just a virus like any other virus, you know. How would you drop the virus? Oh, you could use a DCA also to drop a virus, but that's not the purpose of that particular slide. The point is, however a virus normally spreads, it can be exploited as a DCA by targeting the effect of the virus against the target. It's a targeting issue rather than a... Oh, blank slides. You don't like those. So once you've started down this path, your mind races, and you can just think of one every 10 seconds for the rest of your life. So I thought for 20 seconds and wrote them down. One per site DCA, there's one where you check to see if the intermediary has already been exploited this week, and then only attack if they've been exploited once this week. So if they go to check to see if that's still there, it's not there. There's no such thing there. I checked that place. There was no attack there. The probabilistic DCA, we use a pseudo-random number and to determine whether to launch the attack this time or not. So maybe the probability is only 1 in 10. So if I go to look on that site to see if it's attacking my site, there's a 1 in 10 probability that I'll see the attack actually show up. Right? Of course, it lowers the number that come out, but it's no problem. An email spam is a DCA. For all ex-internet mailing lists, sign up the victim to mailing list X, right? That's essentially a DCA, right? Denial of services DCA. And then forged address DCAs. I mean, you can just think of these all day. One of my favorites is the super spam DCA. See, the super spam, I have one attacker, 500 intermediaries per day, suppose, and I have three victims, and I'm just going to assign each of my three victims up to three lists per intermediary per day. Okay? So if you break into a site, or you have the site browser do this for you, it signs up, you know, Joe, Peter, or Mary to the next in your list of email lists on the internet. 10 mailings per list per day, which is a pretty meager mailing list, gives you more than 45,000 more emails each day. It's not very hard to set this guy up, assuming that there's a three-day persistence before we can eliminate that particular mailing list, because we're so overwhelmed, means that by 30 days we will have sent 2 million emails to this victim. Having spent relatively little effort just signing them up to list after list through intermediaries, so that they can't trace it back to us, it's always some browser on some site that did this to us, or some FTP or some copy of Netscape, or who knows what. Of course, you know, we don't have to do this with hardware or software. We can do it with perception management. Here's an example of a perception management DCA. On May 31st, about 100 FTP attempts per hour started to show up at my site. Now, normally, I didn't have an autoresponder set up for FTP attempts because people accidentally try an FTP, and as long as they only do it once, who cares? It's an accident. They think they're trying to get some file. So at 100 attempts per hour, I decided to turn on the autoresponder at about 8 a.m. And based on the level of traffic, I expected that the time to track down the source would be about 8 hours, based on previous experience. And about 7 hours later, the first useful response came in, and by 12 hours, we knew most of what was going on. The FTPs were caused by perception management. An announcement was made on some IRC channel that we were a WHERE site. You know what a WHERE site is? Anybody know what? If you do not know what a WHERE site is, raise your hand. Ah, very important. A WHERE site, this is where people place stolen software for other people to download. Okay? It's called WHERES. Or I thought it was WHERES, you know. It's WHERES. You know, these hackers can't spell too well. They don't know, you know, none of them are Spanish Americans or something. They don't understand that these things have history. But it's called a WHERE site. So basically on an IRC forum, somebody says, oh, all.net is a WHERE site. They've got the best software. You get to it by like FTPing or telling it into their site. So lots and lots of people from all over the world came into our site. Well, by an hour later, I had figured out and installed a counter-perception management. I sent a message to anybody that tried to FTP and that there's no WHERES here, that we logged your entry and that we've reported to your administrator and sent a copy to the Software Publishers Association. By 9 a.m. the next morning, the levels were down to 2 attempts per hour. We did, by the way, send this audit trail off to the Software Publishers Association, and there were several ISPs that got in trouble as a result, and many companies ended up getting involved in one way or another, and we got real cooperation on this one. Yes, yes, sir. No, perception management is a technique. No, I manage their perception. Somebody was managing their perception to get them to attack my site, and I manage their perception to get them to stop and to go back at the guy who started it and say, so-and-so, you caused me to get caught. See? You're going to be a little bit clever in this world. Yes, sir? Yeah, they call it social engineering. I call it perception management. Yeah. I think in the military it was supposed to be perception influence while there was a particular chairman of the Joint Chiefs, but then he left, and now we go back to perception management. But whatever you want to call it, it's called getting people to do what you want by controlling their minds and hearts. The hearts and minds of whatever. DCAs, of course, can potentially be used as an information warfare weapon. and being as that might be interested. But here are some of their features. They're easily controlled. They're pinpoint targetable. Their effect is often easily measurable. They're hard to trace. Easy to demonstrate causation. I did it. I want you to turn left. I'm not kidding. It's going to hurt if you don't. Plausible deniability, right? Not only can you prove that you did it, but you can also, if you want to, say, oh, I didn't do that. But you have to do one or the other, you know. I don't think, if you could do both, it'd be a really powerful tool. It's excellent for deceptions. It's hard to selectively block because it's coming from all these different places. You can't just shut off a particular IP address or something like that. And it often achieves deep penetration, at least often in the things that we've looked at. A very good book, Victory and Deceit, published by Morrow and Company. Jim Dunnigan and Albert Nuffy, a 95 publication date, describes different deceptions. They are concealment, camouflage, false implanted information, ruses, displays, demonstration, feigned lies, and insight. It's probably not so good. Yes, which word did I misspell? Deceit. Oh. Yeah, well, you know, what can I say? At any rate, you can use DCAs to do all these things. I taught a short course on this and gave examples of all these, but I don't think I have lots of detailed examples here. But for example, you can make an attack appear as if it's coming from a friendly against you, so you shut down your communications with the friendly, and then I've won a victory. Or, you know, if I'm trying to do something in India, I can make it appear as if there's something happening in China and direct your attention away from what I'm doing in India because that thing over in China might be more important to you. Yes, sir. Ooh, interesting question. If you ask me the question again at the end, I'll try and answer you. The question was, if this is so easy to do, how much of it is going on? And yeah, well, that's a lot of people now know about it. That's right. Yeah. Well, I'll answer your question now. The heck with it. You know. If I have another slide later, tough. The answer is that there are some number of people that are still doing this, but I expect that if we had not been able to track them down so well on several occasions, that you'd see a lot more of them. You know, there's something of a deterrent in nobody will ever catch me followed by gotcha. Okay? And so sort of the first really widespread one that I'm aware of, except for the spam. You know, spam's been around for a long time. But this first attack at all.net, you know, we caught them pretty quickly. And, I mean, I called the guy up on the phone, you know, the systems owner over there, and chatted with him. And he said, oh, yeah, well, one of our administrators did that, and we told him not to do that again. But it was him. It was his account that it came from, but I don't want to debate it with him. The point is, I would have paid real money to see the expression on his face when I called him on the phone, you know, because you know that he was expecting somebody to knock at the door and say, you're under arrest. And that kind of a response, after a couple of tries and you keep eating them that way, they decide, we're going to get caught. And then they don't do it so much. And a good example to look at, in my opinion, is, what is it, Captain Crunch? Or who is the guy that spoofed the HBO satellite? Captain Crunch? Captain Midnight, that's right, it was Captain Midnight. And they caught Captain Midnight, okay? Whatever the means, it didn't matter. The fact that they caught him and it hit national publicity meant that the next Captain Midnight said, I'm going to get caught. I'm sure not going to do that one. So that's not a hard thing to do, but if we keep catching them when they try it, they're not going to do it. How many of them are out there today? There's no way to count, but I suspect that some of you may have experienced it. Certainly, I'm aware of a number of places that have experienced it in various forms. Maybe not in the thousands per hour. That's not very, very common. Certainly in the scores per hour. Certainly in the over a lapse of time. One of the things I've started to do done this for a couple of years, is cross-correlate attack information over a period of months and years. And if you do this, you look at your audit trails over a long period of time, you'll find that there are people that are systematically going at you, but waiting months and months between attempts to try and get below thresholds. Okay? So just if you look hard enough, you can find lots of these sorts of things out there. But I don't have an accounting because you can't tell me how many times they've tried it against you. The question is, are they not afraid to get caught because they're in some other country? The answer is, if you're in the Netherlands, you're probably not very afraid of getting caught because they don't seem to be very active in participating. Although I guess that legal case where they got into the anonymizing site, that was in the Netherlands, right? In Finland. I think that backed a lot of people off. But certainly there are international issues. My personal belief is that sending detailed emails to the administrator of the originating source is effective. Another thing there are other similarly effective methods if you feel you have to do that. Another technique that seems to work very well is calling the provider that connects that provider up to the internet. That's real effective because, the provider I talked to expressed in what I understand was a phone call to the provider that was supporting this activity, that she was going home for the four-day weekend and noticed that the plug connecting his site was sticking out from the board, and she was afraid she might trip over it on the way out the door. But she was really hoping that he would provide assurances that these things would not continue at that site, and that she was trying to figure out which way to exit the building. And apparently from the graph, she decided to exit via a route that didn't accidentally cause her to trip over the plug. So there's that sort of force work, but you can't do that to a court of law because it doesn't work. Okay? It's good to have friends, but usually you have enemies that go along with them, and that's not as good. Is the autoresponder a third-party product? No. The autoresponder is something of my design that it does all sorts of neat and interesting stuff. And there are dangers associated with automated response systems. For example, an autoresponder can cause you to deny services. It can be exploited for reflexive control purposes. So you have to know a lot to be able to tune it, and you have to adapt. You have to see this new sort of thing is going on and figure out an appropriate response. But the technology is out there, and if you want to discuss it with me, I'm here. The DCA damage, denial of service, is often pretty easy. It's very easy to deny service with this. The computational leverage is substantial. For example, it's possible in many cases to do an exhaustive search of an attack space because you have, literally hundreds or thousands of computers available. They tend to be open loop exploits.
This is the end of side one.